Thank you. It's so great being at Hemingway's. I remember in the 80s when, can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah,
So,
you
okay. Is this better? Better? Okay. I was teaching at Waste Campus in Monroeville, and Michael Worster and Professor Nancy Gabrielis would bring the students from CCAC to Hemingway's, and it was just such a joy. And whenever I'm at Hemingway's, I just feel so happy to be a Pittsburgher because it's just amazing. So thank you, Joan and Chris, and so great to be reading with Lisa and Stefan as well. I was reading Sharon Olds' Ode to Dirt, and it inspired some odes. So this is called Ode to the Dress. After the blue cactus reading, everyone is laughing, me too, because Luce has just said Doralee is being very quiet now because she knows that she never goes anywhere without the right dress. And I say that Luce can take one suitcase for two people for 3 weeks anywhere in or outside of the country. Luce doesn't know how I flip through Vogue.com for 50 times Michelle Obama wore the Empire sweater dress. That I can't resist town and countries times the Royals wore aquamarine. It's funny, really, when I think about it, because my mother never cared anything about what she wore. Mostly baggy house dresses, the big pockets filled with clothespins, or an errant child shoe, or a new baby's warmed bottle. She bought us boxes of cardboard dolls, their endless array of prêt-à-porter, and the bride doll, too pretty for play, which stood on a high shelf, her face perpetually wide-eyed with wedding jitters. Convention says that if you wore it the first time, don't wear it again, which may be true for the trendy padded shoulders, mini skirts, hot pants, go-go boots. But ancestors, the eternal presence, live and live again. The captain, Asian, African, Russian, Andre Leon Talley's signature, Beatrice Author's topper, the Moo Moo, Hawaiian, Mother Hubbard's offspring, cousin to the 50s house dress. The young poet would never guess how distracted I was from her reading, even sitting here now. How she performed consummately in stiletto sandals, the scarlet lip gloss, flawless. So, in thinking about odes, I always think about Lucille Clifton's Homage to My Hips and also Patricia Smith's Motown Guzzle. Hips after Lucille Clifton and after Patricia Smith. My hips hold me on weak knees and unsteady ankles as I pull spiky weeds like needles from the side of the house, wearing Michael's leather work gloves. He tells me to spray and wait, but I don't have patience. I used to brace Janine on the left hip and take her older brother by the hand many mornings when we walked the block to the sitter's house. Hips girdled and stalking, I'd speed down a steep cobblestone street past Crescent Elementary, hop the 88 Frankstown, transfer to the hill, arrive an hour before St. Benedict the Moore's AM kindergarten. A morning of, what are you wearing? If you're wearing red, stand up. If you're wearing brown, sit down. A morning of, open, shut them, give a little clap. Open, shut them, fold them in your lap. Janine liked to plant her small hands on what would become her hips. You know the pose. An unruly posture she carried into her teens. A provocation she eventually learned not to do in classes, readings, conversations. A tell, code, blues she learned to subdue, then learned to uproot. We lost Harry Belafonte, the great Belafonte. And these three poems are a tribute to artistic pioneers. Hallie. You didn't recognize me as Vivian, hunched over, rug weathered on a Spike Lee street. I refused to bathe for a week. Ask Samuel Jackson what I smelled like. Later, Bond girl Jinx on a Spanish seaside cliff, our Cuba. I stripped the floral sundress covering my belted andress bikini, dived like an exotic bird, a smooth backflip to the waiting liner. But you liked me best in the one that got an Oscar. Me, Letitia, a convict's wife, clinging to the death row jailer, entwined tight as ass. A barber cut with Carmen Jones. Carmen, the shop assistant, slender and kinetic as a twig in wind, scrubs my hair, says how she waxes herself down there. Your hair's soft, she says. Meeting Carmen here takes me to pictures I've seen of Dorothy Dandridge. Tragic mulatto, Donald Bogle chaptered her and Lena. Dandridge in his book poses as Carmen Jones in gypsy skirt and gold hoops, arches her foot, exposes a cafe au lait thigh. Sex talk was everywhere in barbershops growing up, says Charles Blow, an unfortunate name for the author of Fire Shut Up in My Bones, who wears his head shaved. Fluid, he calls his orientation. Carmen caresses my fingers when she takes the tip. Diz. Diz, believer in spiritism, in roots, you captured me. Seemed so innocent then. Weren't you the youngest guy in Paris photos? White shirt, dark tie, played the Paris Apollo, the supper clubs, diners fighting, you call that music? And Mez, them boys will never play two notes when 200 will do. Now you don't let me go. Tonight, it's a night in Havana with YouTube. You and Castro in costume. Your nautical cap, Castro's army fatigues, study your gift, to be or not to bop. Your entourage moves through the airport scenes like dancers tapping clave, leaping snatches of light in a ghost catcher's camera. Baraka found you in dusty recordings, called you high priest, royalty, likened bebop an African idiom, the speech of ooh shooby dooby ooh, and the bent horn, a translating passage. I was reading this serialized novel called Okay, Mr. Field, when I wrote this poem. I think everyone's loves series. I know I'm a big, I just, if it's a series, I have to go for it. Are you an architect? I recall a line from OK, Mr. Field, a serialized novel, as I drive past the now shelled out row houses on Bennett Street. Only the exteriors remain. My college friend Charles lived here and complained when the neighbors didn't keep up. In the story, it's all about the house. House, lonely house, summer house, white stucco house on a mountain in Cape Town that in Hopper's solitude overlooks the sea. In Charles's room, a paper lantern floated over the bed like a blood moon. And Stevie wonders songs in the key of life streamed from the walls, filled every sensation of space. Back in the day, before the Joneses raised the stakes and everyday people learned the language of the ARM, the balloon payment. Before I ever heard someone say house poor, too much house. Before Detroit evolved beyond Motor City, Motown, blue brutality, black uprising, became the name for collapse. Before McMansion was a joke, narrow lawn, no furniture, ghost street, no one home, and the promised invites, just another Americanism, such as, how are you? Have a nice day. And when I wrote this poem, Living with Furniture, I had just read Sharon Fagan McDermott's Living Without Furniture. So this is called Living with Furniture. Even after 20 years reupholstery and an incompetent repair that left it lopsided, I held on to the sofa. Cotton, velvet, tufted, chocolate, like the Labrador we called Sheba, Fran's chocolates and smoking loon Merlot, the inscrutable hours before dawn, like blankets of biography, Du Bois, Robeson, Davis, like Shimon Hansu dancing to Jackson's Love Will Never Do Without You, until the family approached me in the tone reserved for the hoarder. A counselor said he'd never take on a family and asked, why don't you let people help you? Two lifetimes from my grandmother's custom plastic slip covers. I bought it for the first apartment when I would wash my complete wardrobe, 5 well-worn pairs of jeans and 5 peasant tops once a week. A friend I'd met in high school lived on the third floor. Our landlord stole electricity from us, entangled his service with ours, alternated robbing each apartment. My mother called our group the Save the People because we met on Sundays to study. Crisis of the Negro intellectual, black bourgeoisie, and Aptheker's The Morning Breaks. Critiques of the black middle class I carry through the decades. My library of doubt. So these last two poems are about reading, the magic of reading, the transformative power of reading. And this poem, Reading Raymond Carver, has some lines in it from Carver poems. Reading Raymond Carver. I'm reading Raymond Carver at the cluttered desk, and the exposed brick walls chill like a cell this wet Friday afternoon. I left my energy at last night's reading, Anne Waldman singing, and manatee, manatee, humanity, for 60 minutes that felt like 20, even after the Latin dinner. Chorizo and black bean sopa, pumpkin and piñatas, and all I could drink. Carver's final lines enclose like lids. Any minute now, something will happen. I'll leave late for class, lay the book face down and simmering. And this is the last poem, it's called Talisman. Beelzebub's toothless head grins from the slender neck of the chalky-skinned girl in the coffee shop. Does she know who he is? What's his magic? Once someone asked me, a little black girl, where did you get this? I wore the gold star of David like a medal, and I wondered why I had it. Once on a Sunday morning, I saw Oral Roberts calling the ill and injured to place their hands on the television to pray. I watched my grandmother shuffle from bed and with her right hand lift her left on top of the 12-inch set. I kept quiet, pretended to sleep. This morning, from my shaky corner table, I'm reading Philip Levine's The News of the World, the jacket papery in my hands. The last poem, Magic, rises up like a shield to the armies of pestilence marching this day.